There is a fifth dimension beyond that which is known to man. It is a dimension as vast as space and as timeless as infinity. It is the middle ground between light and shadow, between science and superstition, and it lies between the pit of man's fears and the summit of his knowledge. This is the dimension of imagination. It is an area which we call the Twilight Zone.
On the wide front steps of a building downtown, an avuncular middle-aged man sells trinkets from a folding display stand, while, over on the side, a man in a black business suit stands and writes in a notebook.
Right here, ladies and gentlemen, special July cleanup sale. Lovely things, calamine lotion, good for sunburns, and this is for each. How about binoculars?
Street scene, summer, the present. Man on a sidewalk named Lou Bookman, age 60-ish, occupation, pitchman. Lou Bookman, a fixture of the summer, a rather minor component to a hot July. A nondescript, commonplace little man whose life is a treadmill built out of sidewalks. And in just a moment, Lou Bookman will have to concern himself with survival. Because as of 3 o'clock this hot July afternoon, he'll be stalked by Mr. Death.
In the black business suit. Bookman packs up his display case and walks down from the steps. He glances at Mr. Death, but continues to walk away. He passes an apartment building from whose front steps he is greeted by a group of children. He puts his arm around a small blonde girl and walks with her. He sits down on the front steps of another building, and the children gather around him.
What's on today, Lou? Toys, Lou? You're selling toys?
He raises a finger over his lips.
I'll show you what I was selling.
He opens the display case and takes out some toy
There's
robots.
There's one for you.
Thanks, Lou.
That's all right, Maggie. Here's one for you, Ricky.
Thanks, Lou.
Now, the Lou Bookman Social and Ice Cream Hour takes place right after supper. The regular time now. Don't forget.
Bye, Lou.
Goodbye.
He goes up the steps. He enters a small cluttered apartment. Takes off his hat. Fills a watering can and waters his house plants. He looks across the room and finds Mr. Death sitting in his living room.
You're the man I saw on the sidewalk today. You were writing in a book.
You are Lou Bookman, aren't you?
That's right, Louis J. Bookman. Is there something I can show you? Maybe something in collar stays? I'll get them.
No, Mr. Bookman. I'm not here to buy anything.
Oh.
Now let's get to business, shall we? Louis J. Bookman, age 69, right?
I'll be 70 in September.
Occupation pitchman, right?
Yeah, that's right. Are you a census taker?
Born New York City, 1890.
That's right, 1890.
Father Jacob Bookman, mother Flora Bookman.
Flipping a page.
Father's place of birth, Detroit, Michigan. Mother's place of birth, Syracuse, New York, right?
That's right. My goodness, you got it all down in that book there.
Yes, we have to keep these things efficient. Now, today is the 19th of July, and your departure is at midnight tonight.
My departure? Oh, excuse me.
He goes to the door. The blonde girl stands, holding her toy robot.
Hi, Maggie.
The key's bent, Lou. Can you fix it?
Oh, sure. Come on right in. Come on in. Let me see it there. Well, there's your trouble right there. See that little cogwheel? Well, you've been pushing in that key when you were winding it, you see? See, now look, now it's all right. I'd introduce you two, only I don't know your name.
No need.
I think I got it now, Lou. Mm-hmm.
This gentleman came here to ask me a lot of questions.
What gentleman?
That gentleman.
Pointing at a now empty chair.
What gentleman?
Mr. Bookman. She can't see me or hear me.
Why not?
Why not what, Lou?
Well, why can't you see him or hear him?
See who, Lou? He works great now, Lou. Thanks an awful lot. See you after supper, huh?
Well, now, wait a minute. You haven't forgot your manners. Aren't you going to say goodbye?
Oh, yeah. Goodbye, Lou. Thanks a lot.
No, I mean to the gentleman there.
Oh, it's a game. The Invisible Man. Goodbye, Invisible Man. See you after supper, Lou.
She goes out. Bookman holds his hand on his chin pensively.
I can see you, yet she can't.
Only those who are to accompany me can see me. Understand, Mr. Bookman?
Bookman looks around and up at the ceiling.
Mr. Bookman, only those who are to accompany me can see me. Now, don't you think you'd better start making your arrangements?
Arrangements for what?
For your departure.
My departure where?
You still don't get it. I just never will understand you people. You get the idiotic notion that life goes on forever. And of course it doesn't. Everyone has to go sometime.
Go? You mean...
That's right. And what I further don't understand is how little you appreciate the nature of your departure. Think of all the poor souls who go in violent accidents. These are the non-precognition victims. We're not permitted to forewarn them. You, Mr. Bookman, fall into the category of natural causes.
Natural causes? Number one, I find you a very devious sort. Number two, I think that you're dishonest. Number three, why don't you say what you mean?
Mr. Bookman, I've done everything but phone your own undertaker. How much clearer do you want it? If you still don't know who I am, then you're the most dense man I've come up against.
He flicks his finger at a small plant in a flower pot. And it withers and falls. Bookman stares at the dying plant, then at Mr. Death.
You're Death?
Exactly, Mr. Bookman. Now, shall we get down to business? Time of departure is midnight tonight. I trust that will suit you. The preordination is for death during sleep. I assume this, too, will meet with your approval. You'll find this a relatively simple and painless and barely...
Now, just a minute. I don't want to go.
No, they never do.
But there's no reason for me to go. I'm a very healthy man. Outside of a slight cold I had last winter and a sliver that festered in that finger there, I don't think I've had a sick day in 20 years.
That's as it may be, but departure time is set for midnight, and departure will be midnight.
Don't I have anything to say about that?
We do listen to appeals, but frankly, Mr. Bookman, there's very little here in the way of an extenuating circumstance. There are three major categories of appeals. One is hardship cases. Now, do you have a wife or family who might suffer beyond a reasonable point your demise?
No. No family, no.
The second category is priority cases. Statesmen, scientists, men on the verge of discoveries. I take it you're not working on any major scientific pursuit at the moment.
Pointing to the broken toys on a table.
What's the third category?
I don't think you're qualified here either. Unfinished business of a major nature. Well, you don't have any unfinished business, do you, Mr. Bookman?
Ah, but I do. Indeed, I do. That's it, you see. I have some unfinished business. Unfinished business, yes.
Looking at a toy helicopter.
I've never flown in a helicopter.
Turning to where Mr. Death was.
I've never flown in...
Insufficient, Mr. Bookman.
Turns around, looks out the window, then around again.
Anything else?
Now, you look here. I've lived in this room for 21 years, and you keep popping up in corners of the room that I've never even seen before. Would you please stay in one place?
Is there anything else, Mr. Bookman?
Yes. I have never seen a Zulu war dance. Now, that's the answer right there. See, you'll have to give me a couple of months and let me go over there to that Zulu country. No?
No. Unfinished business of a major nature. Something a man has yearned for and something he might accomplish given an extension.
Well, there is one thing.
What is it, Mr. Bookman?
Well, between you and me, I never made a truly big pitch. I mean a big pitch. A pitch big enough for the skies to open up.
Looking upward.
You know, a pitch for the angels. Of course, that wouldn't mean very much to you, but it'd mean a great deal to me. It would mean that for one moment in my whole life, I would have done something successful. It would mean that maybe the children would be very proud of me.
The children?
Yes, yes. I've always had quite a fondness for children, you know.
Yes, that's all here in the record. Problem here, Mr. Bookman, is that you'd require a delay until...
Until I make a pitch. You know, the kind of pitch I was talking to you about there.
One for the angels, you mean?
That's right. One for the angels.
I'm terribly sorry, Mr. Bookman, but no. Well, you see, these categories are fairly specific, and when reference is made to unfinished business of a major nature, well, the only interpretation to be made here is simply that...
Bookman's sitting down with his arms folded.
Well, what I mean is that, unfortunately, Mr. Bookman, an ability to succeed in a given professional venture is really hardly of a major... mean a great deal to you, does it?
Great deal.
Bookman, barely concealing a sly grin.
All right, Mr. Bookman. Under the circumstances, I believe I can grant you a delay.
Until?
What do you mean, until? Until you've made this pitch you're talking about.
I can live till then?
That's the agreement.
Bookman stands up and smiles.
Oh, well, I think that's a fine bargain. I didn't get your name, but... Oh, thank
now,
you.
About this pitch, Mr. Bookman, when might we expect it?
When? Oh, soon, you know. Maybe not this year, maybe not for a couple of years yet, but soon.
Mr. Bookman, I have the very odd feeling that you're taking advantage of me.
Oh, you have? Well, that's a pity. Because I am! You'll never catch me making a pitch anymore.
Stowing his display case.
You think you can fool me, eh? I'll hardly open my mouth from now on.
Really, Mr. Bookman?
Appearing again in the apartment.
This is much more serious than you imagine.
Bookman dons his hat and heads for the door. In the hallway.
It's much more complex than you realize what you've just done.
Heads down the stairs. On the landing.
Here I've gone out of my way to help you, and this is the way you repay me.
Hugging the railing to squeeze by him. Down another flight. But yet again.
Mr. Bookman. It won't just end here, you understand. There'll be consequences, you see.
FYI. That means for your information. You made your bed and you shall have to sleep in it. We made a bargain that I don't have to go until I make a pitch. And you'll have to wait till I make that pitch. I can say this without the least fear of contradiction. Have you got a long wait?
That may well be, Mr. Bookman. But since you won't come with me, I've been forced to select an alternative.
Rushing outside and down to the street. A crowd gathers around young Maggie lying in the street.
Maggie! I swear I didn't see her. She jumped right off the curb and I never had no chance to stop. I swear to you, I never had no chance to stop at all.
Well, did someone send for a doctor? Get an ambulance.
I'll go.
Bookman takes off his jacket and slips it under her head. He kisses her forehead.
You're gonna be all right, darling. You're gonna be just fine.
Hi, Lou.
Hello, sweetheart. Yeah?
Well, who's that man?
At the top of the stairs to the apartment building, Mr. Death continues jotting down in his notebook.
Do you see him?
Yes, Lou.
Bookman gets up and heads over, as Mr. Death descends the stairs.
Hey, wait a minute. You can't take her.
Following him.
No, sir, you can't take her.
Down the sidewalk.
Now listen, I'll go. Never mind the pitch. I don't even want to wait. I'll go right now. You can't take her. I'll go with you at...
He stops. Maggie lies asleep in bed. A doctor leaves the room.
Doc, hey, doctor, where's your limb, doctor? How's Maggie?
I can't tell.
Heads outside where Bookman is waiting on the stairs. He gets up.
Doctor?
It's hard to tell. She's a very sick little girl, but we'll know soon. She should hit a crisis by midnight.
By midnight?
I think by then.
The doctor walks off.
He won't come in. I won't let him come in.
Goes up the steps. Later, in Maggie's bedroom, a clock shows 20 minutes before midnight. Bookman's still outside on the stairs. The sidewalk is empty. Mr. Death strolls by.
Good evening, Mr. Bookman.
You've got business in there?
I most certainly do.
Checks his watch.
It's 11:45. In 15 minutes, midnight. That's my appointment.
Walks past Bookman and sits beside him.
Mr. Death, that little girl's only 8 years old. I'm ready now.
I'm sorry, Mr. Bookman, but I had to make other arrangements. It's impossible to change them now. She's to come with me at midnight, so I must be in there at midnight.
And if you're not in there?
That would be pretty much unheard of. You see, if I didn't get in there at precisely midnight, then the whole timetable would be upset. Oh, I know it's unheard of.
It's unheard of.
Mr. Bookman sets up his display case, opens the lid.
What are you doing, Mr. Bookman?
Oh, just setting up a pitch, that's all.
At this time of night?
Oh, I very often have a late sale. Very often.
Draping ties from the side of the case.
Not many customers.
Oh, they'll be here. They'll come around. You're here anyway.
Oh, yes, I'm here. But I'm afraid I'm not much of a customer.
How do you know? Have you seen my stock? Or take this lovely tie here, for instance.
Grabbing a toy robot.
Oh, excuse me.
Putting it back.
What does that look like to you?
Looks like a tie.
Black and white checkered.
Don't feel it.
So?
Ladies and gentlemen, if you will feast your eyes on probably the most exciting invention since atomic energy, a simulated silk so fabulously conceived as to mystify even the ancient Chinese silk manufacturer.
Mr. Death suppressing
an
laughter.
An almost unbelievable attention to detail. A piquant interweaving of gossamer softness.
Mr. Death examines the tie. Maggie still sleeping. Bookman still pitching. Mr. Death still riveted. Bookman takes out a spool of thread.
Witness, if you will, a demonstration of tensile strength. Feel that, if you will, sir.
Mr. Death grasps the thread.
Unbelievable, isn't it? As strong as steel, yet as fragile and delicate as Shantung silk. Picture, if you will, 300 years...
On the clock, 10 minutes to midnight.
...and labor to develop this, the absolute ultimate in thread. And what would you expect to pay for this fabulous... I say fabulous, incredible, amazing development of the tailor's art.
Death shakes his head.
Would you pay $30 a spool? $25? $20? $10?
Nods his head.
Well, very well you might, sir, if you were trying to purchase this at stores. But this fantastic thread is not available in stores. It is smuggled in by oriental birds, especially trained for ocean travel, each carrying a minute quantity in a small satchel underneath their ruby throats. It takes 832 crossings to supply enough thread to go around one spool. And tonight, At my special Get Acquainted introductory mid-July hot summer sale, I offer you this fabulous thread. Not at $20 a spool, not at $10, not at $5, but at the ridiculously low price of 25 cents a spool.
I'll take all you have.
Digging in his pocket.
Sewing needle, yarn, odd lots of leather, marvelous plastic shoelaces. Genuine static eradicator will fit any standard radio. Suntan oil, eczema powder, razors, athlete's feet destroyer. How about some nice simulated cashmere sock?
All right. I'll take it out. All right.
Filling a paper bag.
And now for the piece de resistance. An item never before offered in this or any other country. One guaranteed live human man servant.
How's that?
For what I ask, you, sir, receive a willing, capable, worthy, highly sophisticated, wonderfully loyal right-hand man to use in any capacity you see fit.
How's that?
Me, Louis J. Bookman, the first model of his kind. He comes to you with an absolute guarantee, all parts interchangeable, with a certificate of 4 years serviceability. He eats little, he sleeps little, he rests only occasionally, and there he is at your elbow, at your beck and call whenever needed.
Mr. Bookman, you are a persuasive man.
I challenge any other store, wholesale house, or industry to even come close to matching what I offer you here. Because, my dear man, I offer you...
On Maggie's nightstand, the toy robot marches past the clock. She stirs awake.
It's midnight.
Rushing to his feet.
It's midnight and I've missed my appointment.
Bookman smiles. Maggie opens her eyes.
Give her the sedatives every 3 hours, Mrs. Polanski. She'll be all right. She just needs a lot of rest now.
The doctor walks outside, passes by Mr. Death, and approaches Bookman.
She's all right.
And walks off. Mr. Death steps down, consults his watch.
1 minute past 12, Mr. Bookman. And you made me miss my appointment.
Thank God.
A most persuasive pitch, Mr. Bookman. An excellent pitch.
Yes, it's quite a pitch. Very effective. It's the best I've ever done. It's a kind of a pitch I always wanted to make. A big one. A pitch so big... so big that the sky would open up.
Pitch for the angels.
That's right, a pitch for the angels. Well, I guess it's time for me now.
As per our agreement.
Well, I'm ready.
Straightening his tie.
After you, Mr. Bookman.
Oh, excuse me, I forgot something. I'll be back in a minute.
Gets his display case, folds it up, and comes back.
You never know who might need something up there. Up there?
Up there, Mr. Bookman. You made it.
Bookman smiles. They walk together down the sidewalk.
Louis J. Bookman, age 60-ish. Occupation, pitchman. Formerly a fixture of the summer. Formerly a rather minor component to a hot July. But throughout his life, a man beloved by the children, and therefore a most important man. Couldn't happen, you say? Probably not in most places. But it did happen in the Twilight Zone.
Credits. Directed by Robert Parrish. Written and narrated by Rod Serling. Produced by Buck Houghton. Executive producer for Cayuga Productions, Rod Serling. Starring Ed Wynn with Murray Hamilton and Dana Dillaway, Jay Overholtz, Merritt Bone. Director of photography, George T. Clemens. Production manager, Ralph W. Nelson. Art directors, George W. Davis, William Ferrari. Film editor, Lyle Boyer. Assistant director, Edward Denault. Set decorators, Henry Grace, Rudy Butler. Casting director, Mildred Goose. Sound, Frank Milton, Jean Valentino. Copyright 1959, Cayuga Productions, Inc. Filmed at Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Studios. Audio description by Lou Lasher.